1221 Gresham Fourier here with you. We're about to get real busy on the Zoom and on the old Twitch as well. You can also watch us on YouTube. Type in WEEI. Get right to the live stream because Andy Hart is with us. Of course, he was in on Monday while Fourier was getting his ankle all hacked up. Hart, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, fellas. How are you?
And you're
Hello,
back.
Andy.
Andy's back on the visor is yep. Hart. He, Christian, you missed it. Hart came in no visor and got comparisons to Brock Purdy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I took that as a compliment.
I don't really see it. Who also was getting comparisons to Lee Harvey Oswald, which was weird.
What?
The side-by-side comparison between those two guys. And then somebody asked him about it at the Super Bowl. I don't think he knew who Oswald was, actually.
Oh, he must have.
Did you see that, though? The people were putting the side-by-side. It actually looked like him.
Yes. And then there were the memes that, like, who are two people who couldn't do it alone or something? Like, playing off the multiple shooter and, like...
So that's how it worked, then? Then they started ripping him for not being able to win a Super Bowl?
Oh, correct. Although... I would argue he was good enough to win the Super Bowl. That it
yeah, so would I. I don't think I would blame it on him.
So now I've gone down the Lee Harvey Oswald road and thinking how much he looks like Hart. Because Hart looks like Purdy, and Purdy looks like this guy. So
I don't think
like,
Hart looks like Purdy at all.
No, I'm saying to Hart and Lee Harvey Oswald, because we know that the ferocity is there from Andy.
What? Oh, now you're accusing me of being
he
assassin.
Could act alone.
I'm
he
not
would definitely
you know.
Act alone.
I'm
he
just,
would be one of those
would,
rogue guys.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And also,
you'd never
I haven't,
find him.
I haven't watched it, but my buddy Rich Keefe at night watched some recent documentary somewhere, and he is fully convinced that Lee Harvey Oswald did not do it, that there's
oh,
no way
my.
In hell he did it. So take that for whatever it's worth on the Dorkcast.
My wife had one of those moments where she watched like one of those things on YouTube or something and then was like, 9/11 didn't happen. I'm
yes.
like, so call your friend. I'm like, call your crazy friend whose husband works at NORAD. Like, get yourself right. Because I couldn't straighten her out. And of course, well, her friend did and all that. But
I fully believe that a great documentarian can convince you of anything. And it's an art. And they just can manipulate Ooh. Visuals and Uh-oh. Music and information. I truly believe that. You watch those things. Like, they could convince Christian he never played in the NFL. Like, it was some figment of his imagination
wow.
or something.
What do you think about this? So what do you think about the whole this docuseries that is going to be coming
yeah.
up? That's airing. We're actually going to have the director on tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So you think they're going to manipulate it? You think they're going to, skirt the truth or exaggerate or hide some things?
I don't necessarily think they're going to hide anything. I do think that this is told from a friendly craft perspective. The books are sold and they have signings in the Patriots Pro Shop. Like, I mean, if that doesn't tell you there's a friendly business relationship between it
well,
and
do you think
the
they had
ownership.
Final cut? Do you think they had final say?
I don't know if they had final say or not. I wouldn't necessarily accuse them of that. But sometimes even when you're doing something, you know who you're working with. And you know who you're working under. And you just kind
who's
of...
Doing you, who's giving you, doing some favors for you,
yeah.
making himself available, giving
right.
you some video, stuff like that. Okay.
Like, I mean, I do shows with you guys. So if I didn't agree with you guys, I would express it, but maybe in a certain way that if it was somebody I didn't like and didn't do shows with, maybe there'd be a little bit more animosity or, attacking. But I'd be like, I love Christian. He said something stupid. We all say something stupid. But if I didn't like you, I'd say the dude's a moron. I don't know how he's on the radio. He can't put a sentence together. That's just an example, by the way.
Wow.
Thank you
so basically, you would. So basically, Hart admitted he would go to being hurtful Hart, which is why we play
he's
the Heartless.
Yeah, he's going to find something that you're insecure about, and he's going to highlight it. That's what he's going to do.
Well, that's what
like
we all
what we do.
Do
with him and his height.
Exact. That's what men do. That's what mean people do. That's what bullies do, and we're all bullies at heart, aren't we?
I don't think I have any friends that I can't make fun of.
I don't think I want right. to. I don't think I want to work with people like this. I'm now part of the new generation. I need you to explain to me, Andy Hart, why you're that way.
Oh,
okay, go to
Foxborough.
Go
get
to
your
Fox
love. Gerard will teach you with love.
If I knock on the door 3 times, will someone come out and just give me a hug, and then that way I can go on my merry way? Would that work?
And so we had the little snippets today while we're talking about the dynasty here. I'm sure you saw the Athletic Chad Graff, talking about, it was brutal, Matthew Slater said, and Tom said, I wouldn't go back for any money. I was done. Correct me if I'm wrong, Christian. Bill Belichick never denied it being brutal. I can remember having personal conversations with him, like, in the little side room, not even in the press conference, where he goes, yeah, this place is a tough place to play, and I'm a tough guy to play for. Like, it is not easy. It is hard here. But that's the reality. And I remember players, oh, it's always easier on game day because practice is hard. Like, you buy into the narrative, and you accept that when you arrive. Same with Saban, right?
I sometimes get floored. I can understand, 10 years of it, and you just kind of get sick of it.
Sure.
I was there 4 years. I didn't think it was very challenging. It was pretty simple. Hey, we're paying you to do a job. Will you try? Will you show up on time? Will you give your best effort?
Why, and Christian, no, by the way, do I need to show up on time, boss?
And this is the weird thing about this business. We're going to pay you for it. But we just and it's only going to be 6 months out of the year, and the rest of the time you can go do whatever you want. Was he tough? I don't know. Like, he was no tougher than any other coach I had. You know, like, as far as the demands that they place on him. The one thing I would say was be different. Like when I went to Washington, like, you can get away with a lot. Guys used excuses, and there was no self-policing. That's why I thought the biggest difference was any good team I've ever been on has always been self-policed. It's been the players that were regulating the locker room, not the coaches.
Yeah, I've always thought there's a little bit more myth than bite in the Patriot way about, like, how hard it is. And I know you've expressed that in a variety of ways. The offense, the same thing. When people come and bitch about how hard the offense is, and you've always kind of downplayed it, like, there's a playbook. Study it. It's all the same plays. It's got a little different language, whatever. But I found it interesting that it seems like we're kind of rekindling. And I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know that Bill's going to be the bad guy throughout 10 episodes of the Dynasty. I hope not. I really hope that's not how this plays out. And I don't think it will. And I think there's a lot of truth to it. It's okay. The Amendola quote. We worked for Bill and played for Tom. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys can work for Ken Laird and succeed for each other, right? Like, you don't have to like your boss, right? He pays the paychecks. He signs you, whatever. You don't have to have this touchy-feely, oh, I'd do anything for that. I love you, man, like Julian Edelman says.
Don't you think that there is a difference between, I look at the Edelmans and the Amendolas and the Gronks, that group of guys, the second dynasty guys, so differently than the first ones. The first group of guys look at Bill so differently than the second group of guys. The first group of guys, they almost cherish the fact that it was tough. They almost, you know, don't want to let go of how challenging it was and how they banded together. I have a totally different experience than those guys, than those younger guys who had Bill when he was older.
And I think that makes sense generationally, right? Yeah. Like, a lot changes in 10 or 15 years, I feel like, of professional athletes. Like, the generations of athletes, and we're going in a completely, Gresh, you joked about it, but even another generation here of the why and the love and the why, because I said so. Like, that's why you have to do this. I'm not going to answer any more than that. And I don't, you know, according to Mayo, and he, I trust him. He's in the room. Like, he has a finger on the pulse of young athletes and 20 somethings. I trust him that you have to answer why sometimes, like, if you want to be successful, and that's fine. That's a coach's job, isn't it? To be able to read the room, know the landscape, and even on an individual basis. I'm sure Bill didn't treat every single player exactly the same 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. I just can't envision that. Like, the smirk he gives to Randy Moss when he wants him to come to his Halloween party and put on a pirate outfit, I don't think there's some other guys that maybe would have gotten the same smirk. They might have gotten the get the F out of my office, but he's Randy Moss. Bill loves his on-field play, his intellect. We're both football guys, and yeah, I'll let it loose with you. I just, the myth and the reality of Bill Belichick, I think, is going to be interesting as we keep moving forward here and compare him to Andy Reid and compare him through these documentaries to whoever. At some point, I think he's going to have to come out and, I don't know if defend himself is the right word, but put himself in perspective for what he accomplished.
No, I think he'll do that with his next job. Because I do think that maybe Bill tweaks some things a little bit, but at the end of the day, Hart, as Foreign and I talked about, you know, when a guy sits in front of a room on a Monday and says, if you do this, this, and this, 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 and this will happen, and then it does, That is a pretty strong explanation of the why.
Correct.
You know what I mean? But I don't know what it feels like now. It's like, you're going to ask your kid to shovel snow? Well, you know, you make sure you don't send a text message. You make sure you handwrite it and deliver it to their room and see if they're willing to come out or whatever. And I get that there's like the softening of the culture, but at some point you would think smart football players would be like, well, God dang, what this guy says is right more often than not. Maybe I should just listen to him.
And that's why it feels like the why questions came from one place, the offense in the post-Tom Brady era. I don't think the defense was still asking why, because all I saw on defense is like Jabril Peppers and these guys telling me how great a coach Bill is and we're put in position to succeed and he's taking too much flack and strays and all those things. The why questions came from where? The offense? Why? Because the offense wasn't succeeding. The offense was if you have success, you don't have to tell people to trust the process. They have eyeballs. They have experiences. They know the process is working. We're winning games. We're scoring points. We're having fun. Whatever. The why questions come when it's not working.
Okay.
That's true. That's a good point.
So off of that, because some people brought it up when Fourier and I were getting after it a little bit earlier. So maybe Gerard Mayo will have a much better understanding as to why Mac Jones asked why, which is the one thing that apparently really set Belichick off, right?
Well, maybe, if Mac Jones is still here, and I'd like to delve into that because I know Christian Fourier took shots at me for posting a question on Twitter today.
I did? What was it?
Would you trade Mac Jones for Zach Wilson?
Oh,
no, you didn't even know it was me you were taking pot shots
it.
At.
No, I laughed hard at that one, too.
I did it.
But if it's okay to ask
Let's
why,
get to it.
But if it's okay to ask why, then wouldn't the guy taking over be like, of course, I completely understand why Mac did that. I can rationalize that. Or is this where we're going to get into hypocrisy central?
Well, I think everybody understands why Mac asked why.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of success. Now, how you felt it or digested it, now the militaristic hierarchy of an organization and a power structure, who the bleep are you to ask me why? Well, I'll be fair. I've never been in the military, but like the Matt Patricia hiring and the Joe Judge hiring, as Kendrick Bourne detailed last week out in Vegas, everybody was asking the same questions inside the building, outside the building, like, hey, how does this make sense? How is this going to work? And so that, I think, started the snowball that was the why questions that Mac was asking. And they would have gone away if they had scored. Remember the Jets in 2007? Patriots, who knows what the Patriots are going to be? Is Randy Moss still good? He pulled his hammy. Okay, it's like 38-3. Okay, it seems like this is going to work. No more why questions. Why'd we get Randy Moss? Because he's the best damn receiver we've ever seen. Why is Matt Patricia running the offense? If they had scored 38 points and then 40 points the next week and then 45 the next week, I bet you Mac wouldn't ask too many why questions. He asked why because the offense was stinky.
Okay. All right, Andy Hart.
Since yeah, let's get into this.
And I didn't know that.
Old
that
orange
true.
Twinkle toes over there.
Yeah, they are. A lot of betadine on my toes right now.
Yep. Oh, I saw that the other day in the photo.
But my toes look good, by the way. Zach Wilson.
No toes look good.
Zach Wilson for Mac Jones. Like, yeah. Explain to me why you would go from bad to worse, horrible to crappy, like mental case to super mental case. Like, why would that even be part of your? Honestly, like, sell me on this.
So, who is the more physically gifted player?
Okay, well, I guess we're going to go with running ability. It's obviously
arm talent.
Oh, does he got a
they
strong
have a job
arm?
That,
I don't know.
They have a job where throwing the football is part of the job. He has a better arm. He's a better athlete. He can make more plays. He can do more. I don't know if you know, Christian, a lot of Patriots fans want to modernize the quarterback position and modernize the offense.
Have a guy that runs around and throws picks. Yeah.
And that's modern. That's absolutely modern.
There you go.
But this is
You're insane.
Why am I insane? This is a trash for trash trade, change of scenery.
What do you think the one thing that those two guys do have in common? What do you think Mac Jones and Zach Wilson have in common?
They are mental puddles of goo. Right?
That's it.
So why not take the more talented mental puddle of goo? I've been told Alex Van Pelt is a like QB whisperer. He works with QBs. He played QB. Give him a shot from wherever, March through August. And guess what? I'll cut him if it doesn't work. And if Mac Jones is here, I'm probably cutting him too. There's a great chance that neither of these quarterbacks, even if this trade happened, would ever make it to the regular season roster. But if you tell me, as I wrote on WEEI.com, please go check it out, and as I put a poll up on Twitter, and most fans are on Christian's side, I think 73% said no, would you trade for Zach Wilson? But I don't hate the idea of, let's say, Jaden Daniels, Jacoby Brissett, Zach Wilson, Bailey Zappi going to training camp. There's your four. And you whittle it down from there and see what. And if you hit the lottery, let's just say the Jets could not have messed up Zach Wilson more. And he gets here, and for some reason, Ben McAdoo and Alex Van Pelt just hit it off with him, and they see things eye to eye. You got a diamond in the rough. You take the turd and you polish it up.
Do you have like any sort of example of an extreme case like Mac Jones and Zach Wilson? I would say that's the extreme case, and there's others. There's the Russell. There's the there's the other draft bust that exists in the NFL. Do you have an example of somebody like that being as low as they are somehow reclaiming their career?
It's a less timely transition, but I think Baker Mayfield, what he did this past year after being a vagabond Carolina. Remember the Rams? The Rams signed him on like a Tuesday and were like, hey, by the way, we play Thursday night. We need you to play. Just do your best. Like he was available. That's my point. Like in a league where they don't have enough quarterbacks, he was just on the street and they did that. And now people are talking about him getting a 3-year, $130 million contract or something.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Okay, settle down. I'm just saying. So there's an example of a former high draft pick that, now the difference, Baker had some success in Cleveland too, whereas Zach Wilson is the candidate in my eyes for my argument that you should have to redshirt all rookie quarterbacks, that they shouldn't be allowed to play their first year. Because I think if Zach Wilson had been forced to sit and learn behind a capable quarterback and a capable coach, maybe he would have had a shot, but he was thrown to the wolves and he fell apart. Do I think it's likely? But I also don't think it's likely Mac ever plays for the Patriots again. I don't think you're going to get much for him. I think the best you could get for Mac is the number two pick in the draft. A guy who once upon a time was worth the number two pick in the draft. And it's your job as a coach to see if deep down somewhere in there, there's a competitor, there's a talent, there's an upside potential guy. You don't have to poo-poo it without even reading it. It's hurtful.
Okay.
Oh, listen. I talked about it with you on Monday. I don't need to read it.
No, I know. Yeah, we kind of workshopped it before I did it today.
I told you directly that this was a silly idea.
Oh, everybody has.
Tremendous content.
You know who also did? Know-it-all Brian Morey chimed in on Twitter.
And what?
And I was like, I said something. He goes, yeah, I didn't read it or watch it. And I was like, well, if you didn't read it or watch it, then how do you know the argument? Yeah. Like, didn't Twitter used to have that thing before you could, like, respond? It said, like, you didn't read this article. Do you sure you want to respond or something? Like, where'd that go?
Well, people ignore it for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Another article today, or there was a podcast with an NFL.com-er Lance Zierlein talking about, well, Elliott Wolf will be a breath of fresh air, but brings up again trading down from number three. Is this just a popular narrative in your mind, Hart, or is there real smoke to the fire of trading down?
I think there's some smoke. It's all going to hinge on what you think of the quarterback that's left, or quarterbacks. I won't presume. Maybe Marvin Harrison goes one or two, and maybe there's two quarterbacks on the board. It's all going to hinge on what you think of those quarterbacks. I think trading down is a loser's lament, is out of fear. It's people that are afraid to draft a quarterback, afraid to assess the position, afraid to develop the position. I took a little time in the snow yesterday, as I told Rich Keefe last night, to do a little bit deeper dive on the top three quarterbacks. I am quite comfortable taking any of the three at number three. I have preferences. I have stacking order, but I think there's a big drop-off after those three guys. I don't love the idea of all the, you can just take Bo Nix later. I think Bo Nix stinks. I think
you're
Bo
not going to buy into the J.J. McCarthy hype train that has somehow been established?
He's actually sliding, I think, into my four slot, but okay. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I think he's just a four-slot holder. I'm not a Penix guy. I'm not a Bo Nix guy. I think there's three quarterbacks that could be franchise quarterbacks. I'm not guaranteeing anything because it's a virtual certainty that all three will not be franchise quarterbacks. But this idea that's trading down, I've never really understood it. It's one of the great fights I've had with your former producer guy, fella, Chris Scheim, in that he said the Bengals shouldn't take Joe Burrow when they had the number one pick because they had too many holes to fill. A quarterback wasn't going to fix everything. Well, guess what? A quarterback fixes almost everything.
Well,
if they're good, if they're a franchise guy, they fix, they cover. We lived it for 20 years. What was Tom Brady was the human Band-Aid or WD-40 or duct tape. He pulled it all together and lubed it all up, and you won in the end. So that's the reality. It's, you don't have to like it, Gresh. Heck, you don't have to like it, Christian. As former players, linemen, tight ends, whatever, you're not as valuable as the quarterback. You're not as important as the quarterback. Mm. The quarterback is the most valuable entity. Head and body. I'm not just saying body, not just physical tools. Head and body, most important entity in all of sports.
All right, you said that at the end of the segment, so we'll have to let it go. But let me, good slide in there. But let me mention this. Maybe, just maybe, the thought is about the 2025 quarterbacks.
Who are
they? And that, well, I could run down the list. There's Pratt from Tulane. There's the kid from Texas A&M. The people love Shadeer Sanders. I'm not in on him. Ugh. There's a big batch of quarterbacks.
I don't think that group can hold this group's jock because you have Caleb Williams.
You don't even
know
who they are.
That's the point. Caleb Williams for 3 years has been perceived as the number one pick in the draft. Drake May for 2 years has been perceived as a top half of the first round quarterback. I like.
And people are now like, I don't know about those guys.
You know why? Because the longer you look, you find Pitts to, no, is it Nicks to Pitts?
Yeah. You find Nick Pitts to pick.
Well, when a guy
comes out and says, yeah, I should get part ownership of the franchise, that's on him.
Did he actually say that? I think it's open season. I think there's a lot of people taking liberties with Caleb Williams and his group and what he wants and what's he. You know what also, though? So how many Super Bowls do John Elway and Eli Manning have?
Four total.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right? One's in the Hall of Fame, one probably will be.
Well, Elway went to five.
Both were dinks that when they came into the league that refused to play for a certain franchise and thought they were bigger than the process, and I don't just have to go where they send me. I'm going to go where my family name or my power can put me. So guess what? Sometimes dinks can be great franchise foundational pieces.
Yeah. Well, if they do it off of one good year.
Yeah. Get off my lawn.
I'm just
saying.
Grab
the tackle. Gresh wants a lineman.
I'm just saying. Don't be surprised if this team looks to put together a team and then maybe address quarterback next year because they know it would be back-to-back years in the top five taking quarterbacks potentially. But then again, what's another thing for us to unpack with our buddy Andy Hart, who, of course, joins us each and every Wednesday, and read his work at WEEI.com or just follow Christian's Twitter, who will counteract everything Hart says.
And
Hart,
read it before you rip it.
There you go. Hart, thank you, buddy.
See ya.